If you would, please, go ahead and open your Bible to 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 6 is where I'd like for us to start with a little bit of review from our last story. We're several weeks after David escaped from King Saul, and he's on the run. He has been hiding out in Judea territory, southwest of Bethlehem, northwest of Hebron, and southeast of Adullam, where he originally met with 400 of his men. David has found out that King Saul has butchered the high priest and all of his attendant priests that were there at the tabernacle when David got some support. And he found this out because the surviving son of that high priest has now become the priest in exile with David's group. So 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 6, talks about that priest in exile. When Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, that's the late high priest, murdered by Doeg the Edomite, had fled to David to Keilah, he had come down with an ephod in his hand. Now it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah, that's the city that David rescued from a Philistine invasion at God's direction. And Saul said, God has given him into my hand, for he shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars. So Saul figures that David has screwed up. He has allowed himself to take refuge in a city that can easily be surrounded and besieged. So Saul summoned all the people to war, so thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands perhaps, to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. Now David knew that Saul was plotting harm against him. He said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod here. Now the ephod is the priestly uniform, the high priest uniform, which means it's got that chest piece, and behind that chest piece is the pocket where the Urim and the Thummim are located. The two stones that are used to determine God's will in a yes or no fashion. So David inquires of God through Abiathar the priest. David said, O he who is the God of Israel, your servant has surely heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city on my account. Will the men of Keilah surrender me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? Oh, he who is the God of Israel, please tell your servant. So there's two questions being asked here with a yes or no answer that can be given through the stones. So the first question that God answers is this one. He who is said, he will come down. So yes, Saul will definitely come to Keilah. David then said, will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul? And he who has said, they will surrender you. Now this comes as a great shock, I'm sure, to David. That this city that he came to defend from the Philistines, he went and destroyed the Philistines and got the stuff back from them that was being stolen and brought it back to Keilah. So he was their savior. But they are so scared of the tyrant King Saul that when Saul shows up, they will hand David over. So verse 13, David and his men, who were about 600, so he started out with about 400 when he first arrived at the cave of Adullam, and then he's been reinforced since then. We had a big bunch of Gadites that came in. So now they're up to 600 fighting men. So they arose they departed from Keilah, and they went wherever they could go. And when Saul was told that David had escaped from Keilah, he gave up the expedition. So the only reason that Saul was coming down to Keilah was to catch David, which is really sad when you think about it. Saul should have been down to Keilah to rescue it from the Philistines, but he didn't bother. The only thing that he's got on his mind right now is catch David and kill him and anyone that's on his side. So once he figures out David's not at Keilah anymore, he forgets about coming to the city and goes back to his capital city of Gibeah, just a little bit north of the modern city of Jerusalem. Now, where does David go after leaving Keilah? He probably, first of all, goes back into the forest of Helet, which is a little bit east of Keilah. But that region is maybe too easily searched at this point by Saul's men. So David decides it's time to move elsewhere. And where does he go? It says, verse 14, David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. Now, Ziph is south and east of Hebron. So David heads off to the southeast, goes past the city of Hebron, and down to the wilderness of Ziph. Ziph is, I think it's about 10 miles southeast of Hebron. And so the wilderness of Ziph would be off to the east of there. Because what happens is that this hill country that Hebron is part of, and which has vegetation on the hillsides and things like that, the farther east you go, the more desolate it becomes. This is the great wilderness of Judea. It's all along the western side of the Dead Sea, or what they called back at that time the Salt Sea. So David is now right at the fringe of the settled areas of Judea. So he's staying as close as he can, as far away from civilization as he can, but still be close enough that he can get supplies as needed. Saul, according to verse 14, sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. So Saul has got spies out all over the place, all over Judea, trying to track down David and his men. Verse 15, David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. And I believe Horesh that we're talking about here is off to the east of the city of Ziph. Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. Now, David would be open for Jonathan to come and visit him at the encampment at Horesh, and probably would have made arrangements, you know, to secret him in and secret him back out again. So this is a big-time covert visit between Prince Jonathan and David. Verse 17, he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul my father also knows this." Now, this, I think, is really important information. Jonathan is by right, under all of the normal rules of the Middle East at this time, the crown prince. He is the eldest son of the current ruling king. But he doesn't believe that he'll ever be king. he is positive that David will be king, and not just that, that Jonathan will be his right-hand guy. And he wants that. He wants to be David's right-hand man. And he also is very much convinced that his father knows that this is the way it's going to play out, and that that's why he's trying to kill him. But Jonathan has confidence that God will not let that happen. Remember that David and Jonathan are best friends because they are both men after God's own heart. Both of them have done great exploits because they trusted God. So verse 18, the two of them made a covenant before he who is, and David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. Now again, why does Jonathan not just stay with David? And the only explanation that I can give you from my heart is that while Jonathan loves David, knows that he's going to be king, that he's a better man than his father, Jonathan, I think, is convinced that Saul needs him more. Saul needs Jonathan's influence. It may be that in his heart, Jonathan thinks he can redeem his father at some point before his death. Because right now, his father is lost. And I think Jonathan knows that. And if he abandons him, what hope will there be for him? He'll only have the echo chamber of all those people that are around him and agreeing that David is the threat. David is the danger. David is the reason why King Saul is not secure as king. So Jonathan makes the very intentional choice to stay with Dad for Dad's benefit. David and Jonathan have already made a covenant of great importance. And we've talked about this before. It was common practice back at that time, and actually for many millennia before and after, that if a new administration took control of a country, they wiped out everyone that was related to the past administration. Just annihilated them, because they didn't want any of that coming back up again. They didn't want anyone making claims that they were the legitimate heir to the throne. David and Jonathan have entered into agreement where David will not do that. When he becomes the new king, the family of Saul will be perfectly secure. They'll be perfectly fine. And so he's made that promise, and Jonathan has made his promise to support David in his kingdom. All right, so the secret visit of Jonathan is finished. And verse 19, then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, is not David hiding among us in the strongholds at Horeth on the hill of Hakilah, which is south of Yeshimon? Now come down, O king, according to all your heart's desire to come down, and our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hands. So some of the Ziphites, the people who actually live in the city, they have a general idea where David is located, and they rat him out to King Saul. See, they want to be in Saul's good graces, because Saul is a tyrant, and they know what happens to those that remain silent and look like they're on David's side. They get killed. So they volunteer this information to King Saul. But they don't have specifics. So verse 21, Saul said, may you be blessed by he who is, for you've had compassion on me. Now this saddens me. Saul thinks that he is still king by God, by God's directive. And he uses that sort of language when he's interacting with the people, when in fact God has abandoned him. Verse 22, go, make yet more sure, know and see the place where his foot is and who has seen him there, for it is told me that he is very cunning. See therefore and take note of all the lurking places where he hides, and then come back to me with such information, and then I will go with you, and if he's in the land, I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah. And they arose and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. So Saul says, I need more specifics. I need you to scout around that region, and I want you to map out every place that he's using as a hideout in that region. I need you to tell me some of his habits. Tell me some of his routines. And I want you to also tell me who is supplying him things. I want to know what sort of local support he's getting. I need this information. Get it for me. And so these Ziphite informers go back to their town and they start gathering that information. Verse 24 continues. Now David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the Arabah to the south of Yeshimon. Now this gets back to this region near Ziph. So Ziph is a few miles southeast of Hebron. A place called Carmel is about that same distance south of Ziph. And then, just a couple of miles south of Carmel, there is a city called Maon. And the region off to the east of Maon and the southeast of Maon is called the Wilderness of Maon. It's that dry, very sparsely vegetated area that goes down to the shores of the Salt Sea. So David is apparently moving around east of Ziph and east of Carmel and east and southeast of Maon. So he's moving around into different hiding places in that area. And so these guys are checking all that information out. Verse number 25, Saul and his men went to seek him, and David was told. So he went down to the rock and lived in the wilderness of Maon. So he takes off to the southeast of the city of Maon and hides out in a little hard-to-find place in that region. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David into the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men were on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul, and Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them. So it becomes like a running game here, a very serious, lethal running game. And it appears to me that David's men are running east, deeper and deeper into the Judean wilderness. And there's an area down there that you start running into these wadis that drain down into the Salt Sea, into the Dead Sea. And so it's very rugged, and there's some narrow places where you could have a body of men on one side of a ridge running along, and they're chasing another body of men that are farther down the wadi, and they're on the other side of that same ridgeline because they zig and they zag. And so David is running down into the Dead Sea Valley. And Saul's men are hot on their heels. And that's when God apparently intervenes by allowing other events to become pressing to King Saul. Verse 27, a messenger came to Saul at that exact moment, saying, hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land. So this is raiding season for the Philistines. We've already talked about that. They come in and steal all the grain and other products of the land from the Israelis that are living in the border regions of Judea. And so Saul finds out that there's a big raiding party of Philistines that are somewhere to the west. And Saul can't ignore this. He's got to do something about this, or he won't have a kingdom. So verse 28, Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. And therefore, that place was called the Rock of Escape, or the Rock of Dividing. And no one knows exactly where it's at. I've done a little bit of research, and there's some people that were thinking it's a little bit west of Carmel and Maon, and that doesn't make good sense, because David needed to be escaping eastward from that region that was already east of those places. So I would guess that the Rock of Escape is probably in the Wadi system to the north and west of Masada, which is down in that same area. So like I said, very, very rugged. And David would have eventually ended up down in the Dead Sea Valley. Now, that is important to the next phrasing that comes up in the passage that we'll look at in Samuel in a little bit, maybe tomorrow. Because now we need to bring in a couple of psalms. Remember I told you there are superscriptions that are very ancient on the front end of quite a few of the psalms. And some of these are chronologically related. And one of them is Psalm 54. And that's where I want you to go next. And I want us to read these psalms for their emotional content. So the superheading is to the choir master with stringed instruments, a maskil of David. So all of that has to do with musical information as to how this thing is to be played, what instruments are supposed to be used. But here's the chronological tie-in. When the Ziphites went and told Saul, is not David hiding among us? So this is what David sang whenever he was thinking about this incident. Psalm 54, 1. O God, save me by your name. Vindicate me by your might. O God, hear my prayers. Give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers have risen against me. Ruthless men seek my life. They do not set God before themselves. Selah. Now, Selah seems to be something to say, put a lot of music in here, make it big. But you can hear David being upset that these Ziphites that don't even know him betrayed him, turned him over to King Saul to be killed. Verse 4, behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. He will return the evil to my enemies. In your faithfulness, put an end to them. So he says, boomerang it. You deal with them, God. You give them back the thing that they were trying to do to me, which was actually a justice thing. If you tried to get someone killed with false testimony, whatever was supposed to happen to them would happen to you if you got caught. And then listen to this at the end. With a freewill offering, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O he who is, for it is good. For he has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. So David makes a promise that when this is all over with, he intends to go to the tabernacle and offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving. Let's go to Psalm 63 next, and this is where we'll finish up today. It says, a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah, and that's definitely where he's at right now. O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. And that definitely describes this Judean wilderness. So I've looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory, because your steadfast love is better than life. My lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. In your name, I will lift up my hands. So David remembers those times he's been to the tabernacle and praised the Lord, and he pictures himself back there again, instead of here in this dry land, this place where a thirst takes hold of you because it's so hot all day long and even into the evening. You know, when we stayed at a hotel, not last year, but the year before in Israel, down in the Dead Sea Valley, it was 110 degrees at 10 o'clock at night. So if you don't have water, it is a bad place to be. Verse number 5, my soul will be satisfied with rich and fat food. My mouth will praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you've been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy. My soul clings to you. My right hand upholds you. So you can hear David saying, despite all the other things happening in my life, I trust you. You're the one that gives me strength and protection. But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God, and all who swear by him shall exult, for the mouths of liars will be stopped. So you can hear in that psalm, David knows he will eventually be king, and he will be vindicated, and God will deal with all of these people that have been going along with King Saul and lying about him and trying to kill him, because David knows God is on his side and has anointed him as the next king of Israel. Well, we'll go ahead and come back to 1 Samuel 24 tomorrow when we get back into God's Word.